What's up, podcast people? This is Greg Gillis of the rock band Girl Talk. You're listening to Moe's Train Tracks podcast. Have a good day. Good night.
Hey, girl, how you doing? You are the woman that I'm really pursuing, and I would like to get to know you. Can you give me your name? And you jot down your number, you'll get mine in exchange. Hey, see, I'm the man of this town, and I hope you wouldn't mind if I showed you around. So when you go to certain places, you'll be thinking of me. We got people to meet and many places to see. Hey.
Purple stuff. Bring them out, bring them out, DJ. That's my DJ. Bring them out, DJ. That's my DJ. Bring them out, DJ. That's my DJ. Bring them out, bring them out, DJ. That's my DJ.
I let my tape rock to my tape pop.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall. I let my tape rock to my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? The hard. You never thought that hip hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Peace to Ron G, Brucey B, Kid Capri. Funk Master Flex, Love Bug Star Ski.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to Mo Train's Tracks Podcast. This is Mo. Today on Tracks, we've got everyone's favorite laptop party assassin, Greg Gillis, also known as Girl Talk, from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You know, for as long as I can remember, my favorite party album is the Beastie Boys' License to Ill. But now, the B-Boys got some company. If anyone out there wants an album that you can play from start to finish that will fuel your party, it's definitely Girl Talk's Night Ripper. Back in June of 2007, Mo Train Strikes crew had the opportunity to get on stage during Girl Talk's set at Bonnaroo. Tens of thousands of people were packed into that pavilion to rock it out for 1 hour of pure, unadulterated party madness. Make sure you go check out Girl Talk when it comes to your area, because it's one party you'll never forget. King B and I actually caught up with Greg in Philadelphia at the Starlight Ballroom when he was on tour with White Williams, Sky Mall, and Dan Deacon. You know, down at Bonnaroo, King B and I were supposed to interview Greg, but instead, Greg, Andrew, King B and I decided to go hit the Tool Show. And actually there, we did a little interview, and it went a little something like this.
We are in the fucking crowd. It is, wait, Greg, hold on, this interview is called something new. What are we calling it today?
Interview in the motherfucking pit.
That's right, motherfucker. We're here with fucking Greg Gillis, King B, fucking all of us. We're fucking getting rowdy in the pit. Yeah, fuck yeah. Hold on a second. Cheers, motherfuckers. We are in the pit right here with Donnie.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Dude, this is one of the most odd interviews we've ever done. We're here with Greg. What do you think about fucking Tool so far?
Tool is fucking ripping it up tonight.
Yo, you're ripping up tomorrow night, and we're gonna be there. Yo, you better let us on stage with you.
Everyone is invited on stage, unlike this Tool show.
Bob, yeah. We gotta get someone to go crowd surfing. We're gonna interview them.
We need to get someone up real quick. Right.
We got a girl who wants to be interviewed in the pit while crowd surfing. We are here, Mo Train Strats, interview in the pit. With Greg Gillis, Girl Talk right there.
Yeah.
Are you gonna go see a set tomorrow night or what?
Oh yeah.
Greg, listen, she says she wants to go see your set tomorrow night, but we might have to kick you out unless you go crowd surfing at least 20 feet.
Okay.
So we're gonna measure it. All
right.
And we're gonna interview. We're gonna interview you as you go on top of the ride. Okay. Ready? Here we go.
Wait,
hold on, here we go. Get her up, guys.
Are you laughing? Videotape this.
We all smell like dirty fucking hippies!
You gotta go 20 feet, motherfucker!
That was an exclusive! Watch out, she's falling!
She's gotta go 20 feet! That's like 13 right there! 14! 15!
Oh, watch your hands!
Dude, I think that's 20 feet. I think that's motherfucking 20 feet.
This is an exclusive crowd surf interview.
Tomorrow, she's got to be on stage.
She's
too.
In. She's in.
We got a crowd surfer across the stage.
She is fucking in. She made the 20 feet cutoff.
You got it.
Going, gone.
Dude, she made it 20 feet. She's going.
She's still going, dude.
She's at about 40 feet right now. Wow. 30 motherfucking feet.
I think we have set the standard here tonight.
I think it's going to set the record. 50 feet. I'm looking at 65 feet right now.
She's still going.
Dude, I'm thinking 75 motherfucking feet.
We're
75 feet.
We're going to see her at the LB show. She's still going to be sound service.
Dude, she is still going. She is still going.
Holy shit, she's back.
Oh, my God. Oh, my fucking God. That is not her. That is not her.
This is asinine.
Another dude is going up.
Oh, we lost the mic. We lost the mic. He's going down on his head. Oh, she got kicked in the face.
Yo, whose idea was this?
Andrew,
man. I'll tell you what. You're fucking starting a new trend. I'm telling you.
That's my style, baby. That's my style, baby. New shit. New shit all the time. All kinds of new shit. Crazy shit. Bitches and shit. Bitches and shit.
Are you pissing?
Yes, I'm pissing.
She didn't appreciate it.
So heavy.
She might have been taking a deuce.
I think she was taking a piss, but she denied it so hard.
Yeah! Interview in the pit, motherfuckers!
Hey,
I'll tell you what, every time I listen to that recording, it cracks me the hell up. If it sounded crazy, it certainly was because we smuggled in a handle of vodka and were ripping shots throughout the Tool Show. And there it was, the insanity of the inaugural interview in the motherfucking pit. Yo, I know you guys are just as big as partiers as we are. And if you guys need that one soundtrack to get your party going, make sure you go check out illegalart.net and go pick up Girl Talks Night Ripper. The Motrains Tracks crew has met tons of musicians this year, but I gotta say there is no one better to party with than the man, Greg Gillis, aka Girl Talk.
Let's go back to Bonnaroo.
Yeah, yeah.
We were gonna do the interview, I guess it was, what, about 4 months ago, almost to the day. We ended up actually just drinking and ending up going to the Tool Show.
That was the best interview I've ever had.
What was the interview called? Hold on a second.
Interview in the bed.
Yeah, that was insane. I got to say, that night and being on stage during your set was probably the most memorable. Yeah, one of the most memorable parts of
that. I had a blast that weekend. It's funny because I think before we ran into you guys, we were kind of just not really doing much. You know, we were checking out some bands, chilling.
Yeah.
And then once we hooked up with you guys, that's like kind of when the party started for us. And that night turned very sloppy. I don't know if we even told you, but Andrew was kind of puking out the window the whole ride back to the hotel. That's a good one, you know.
Oh, by the way, I told you earlier that there was a rumor that you were doing another show in Philly. That is total rumor.
I think so. I mean, the funny thing is, I don't have a manager, and I just like manage myself. I have a guy who books my shows, but yeah. I'm very like do it yourself. But I'm also like fairly busy enough that I lose track of things pretty easily.
Right.
So it could be happening. I have no idea, but I don't think so. Normally, like, it takes me a while to put together like sets of music.
Right.
So normally I try to play spots, you know, once to twice a year, just so it varies a little bit, because it's not like a standard DJing sort of thing where I can come out.
Well, this set was totally different than Bonnaroo.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I really kind of pride myself on that, just so like people who could come out 6 months later and hear like a whole new set of like remixes and whatnot.
Speaking of Bonnaroo, what did you feel about that?
That was great. To be honest, like, I really wasn't expecting that crowd to be as receptive as they were. I like a lot of those bands, but to me, Bonnaroo, the stereotype is kind of like Jam Band Festival or whatever, which I guess it's outgrown that, clearly. Yeah, I just had no idea, you know what I mean? It has kind of a different vibe than probably a lot of my normal crowds coming out. Just prior to the show, I was just thinking, you know, I have no idea. This could just tank, you know? This could be not the crowd for it. But then that was the most receptive festival I've played to, like, ever.
It was insane.
So it was great.
There's probably, what, 10,000 plus people there?
Yeah, it was just, I mean, that's a whole different vibe. I mean, playing the club shows is really, you know, where I'm comfortable at and to kind of jam with everyone. But that is, like, on some other shit where it's just, you can look out there and see, like, thousands of people kind of moving together. It's, like, an insane thing.
Well, you've had tons of famous people on stage with you, besides the Motrains Tracks crew. I mean,
it's hard to top that. You know?
Coachella, you had Paris Hilton, and you had
Perry Farrell came out.
Perry Farrell.
I mean, I didn't really expect that, because I mean, people coming on the stage has become a part of the show. I've never really planned it out; it just started happening.
Yeah.
And then people saw it, and then people want to do it every show. So it's really funny because Coachella kind of has that LA celebrity vibe. So it was pretty funny to me that actual celebrities kind of partook in like what everyone else normally does. Yeah.
Did you know what was going on when it happened, or did you just...
I actually had no idea. I actually like am staring at the computer pretty intently, and I'm clicking the mouse every 15 seconds. So I was in the zone, and then as soon as I was done, everyone was like, man, Paris Hilton was dancing right next to me. I thought everyone was like messing with me, you know what I mean? Because it seemed very funny. But then, you know, I checked the YouTubes and, you know, you could clearly see her up there. It was kind of crazy.
Well, you did the festival tour and then you started on your own tour. Well, you're selling out most of your shows, aren't you?
Yeah. This is crazy to me because the past year I had a day job, 9 to 5 most of the time. So I had the schedule where I'd fly out every Friday, Saturday and do shows and then get back to work. And I did that for like 100 shows last year while working 9 to 5. So it's like every single weekend. So I just quit my job like 3 months ago, and this is like day 6 of my first extended tour in like 2 years, which is something I used to do with my friends all the time. When we had less of a falling, you know, we'd go, drive around, play to 10 people in every city or whatever, you know, it was a good time. So it's cool because all the bands I'm playing with are my buddies, and, you know, we're actually driving everyone. We have shows every night. So it's a bit insane for me because I'm very used to just like having every time I perform be a party. And I don't like to fake it. I really like to get drunk if the audience is going to get drunk, or I like to, you know, actually sweat and enjoy it, you know what I mean? So it's nuts to do it every night. It's like, I'm having a good time so far, but we'll see, you know, in 2 weeks if I'm still, you know, if I still have the stamina.
Talk about sweating it out. Before the set, we were all drinking in the back room and like getting drunk, and by the middle of the set, I was like, holy shit, I'm fucking sober right now, you know?
I've almost never finished a set feeling drunk at all. You know what I mean? I usually have a few drinks before I play, you know, a couple, depending on the show. But yeah, it really sweats it out. I mean, the only time it goes down, I mean, I did actually did 2 shows in New York on Saturday, and it was an early show and a late show, and the late show just was so debaucherous just because everyone had already played a show, you know what I mean? And people were just feeding me drinks on stage, and that was one of the few times I ever remember being like very, you know, kind of out of it by the end of an actual
show. How was it? Did you get through it or what?
Yeah, it was cool, man. I was talking a bit more, you know, stopping the music to talk. I really wanted to talk. I had all these epic things to say all of a sudden, you know, where I don't normally say anything. Right, exactly. But it was cool. By the end of the set, I actually was trying to order 30 tequila shots for the people on stage, and they would not do it because it's an 18 and up show and they needed to see 30 wristbands. And
yeah,
I think
true.
I was lucky because I think the tequila shots were $8 on that night. So
it could have been expensive.
That would have been a heavy hit.
Basically, you were living a double life, right? The people that you were working with didn't know what your deal was in the weekends. So you're just rocking it out in the weekends and going back to work. You were in a lab, right?
Yeah, I did like biomedical engineering. Yeah. That's my title. So yeah, I really had a double life for one. I didn't tell them about the music thing at first because when I started, you know, it wasn't as big of a deal. It wasn't like encompassing my whole life.
Yeah.
And then once it kind of finally took off, it was too late. Like I couldn't just all of a sudden, a year and a half into it, be like, well, I actually play this laptop and do these remixes on the side and tour around. It had been very weird for them. So I just never told them. So I was really like holding this crazy secret. It's kind of weird. You know, to me, it was like a big social lie, you know, like a kind of like funny, like Seinfeld-y, so Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah, some sort of like weird thing, you know. So
maybe I read it on the internet. You did a show, and then maybe you guys had like you guys beefed with a Lloyd Banks camp or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
With that?
So this was like, I mean, to put this into perspective, you know, I've been doing this music thing for a while,
right?
And it used to be a very underground thing, you know. Yeah. And it's like last summer, some reviews went down, and I got like. Popularity rose very quickly for me. So I kind of went to playing from, you know, 10 people to, you know, hundreds of people overnight.
Right.
And one of the first things that happens was it went down around late last summer. So the VMAs, the MTV Video Music Awards are, you know, going
on. Last summer?
Last year, you know. Okay. It always goes on in September. And so Blender Magazine asked me to come out and play their party. You know, kind of not really knowing what the deal was, probably never seen me, just hearing my album, they heard good reviews and stuff. So the party was hosted by like 50 Cent and LL Cool J. And it was like a straight up like MTV VMA after, like full blown, you know what I mean? They asked me to play it.
You were invited to play it.
Right, and the artists performing were me and CeeLo doing a handful of Gnarls Barkley songs. They had this VIP room and it was just CeeLo and I, and like he had his crew and I had my buddies and we were just hanging out, you know what I mean? He was a cool guy and took pictures, all my friends, we were all kind of geeking out over him and stuff, and he was really comfortable with it. So I played my set and did my thing, and it was cool. And then afterwards, late night, like, of course, all of my friends were just getting wasted. It's like free alcohol, and it's like celebrities everywhere, and we're just like these idiots, like in ripped jeans and stuff. You know what I mean? So, like, we're having a good time, and at the end of the night, our room was kind of overlooking the whole dance floor, and I think one of the guys I was with, I still don't know if he spilled water or if he threw water. I think everyone was so wasted, just like it was probably a combination of it. But one way or another, water went out of that window and onto the dance floor. And I guess it went all over
right
Lloyd Banks.
Right onto Lloyd Banks.
And like, and the thing was, he did it and he didn't tell anyone. So we were all talking. No one saw him do it. No one knew he did it. And then all 5 minutes later, Lloyd Banks comes walks in the room. And we had just seen this huge cardboard cut out of him on the street with this huge medallion. He comes right. walking in with that same exact medallion on. And I'm just like, holy shit, it's Lloyd Banks. He's in my room, you know?
now he wants to fuck me.
Yeah, yeah. And he's just like, who threw the water? And we're all just like, we have no idea what you're talking. We honestly didn't know, you know? And my one buddy who did it is just like silent in the corner, you know? And he's just like, who threw the water? And all of a sudden, like, his entourage filled up the room. And it was like, just Lloyd Banks plus like G-Unit crew, you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Some big dudes, and we're just like hanging out there. It was funny because security actually came in, and it, technically it was like my room. So they kicked him like out of my VIP room. You know what I mean? But they looked over, and my friend was throwing up in the bathroom, and they're just like, this is out of control. You guys all got to go. So they kicked us all out. And I tried to like apologize to him on the floor, and his security guards were not having it. So it was a brief brush with, you know, some serious G-Unit crew, I guess.
That could have definitely turned out for the worst.
I know. It was pretty weird, man. I honestly felt like a fight was going to go down. I honestly think we would have got handled pretty excellently.
I wish Team Excelsior was there. Yeah, we would have rolled up. Brush with death. You had a brush with death recently. I don't know. I was on your MySpace. I read your blog about the plane flight.
Oh, yeah. It was a
little
crazy. Dude,
that struck a personal note with me because I'm deathly afraid of flying. Like,
see, I'm cool with flights.
Really afraid of flying. And I was reading the story, and I was like, I felt like I was getting goosebumps.
I've never
reading it.
It's weird because, I mean, I've been flying a lot this year, so I felt like immune to anything going wrong. You know what I mean? You just do it enough that it just was like, I don't care. But that was very weird. I mean, they announced that we were going to have to land without the landing gear, and they couldn't get it working, and we were an hour late. We had been circling the airport, and, you know, everyone was kind of freaking out, and it was a bit bizarre because, like, no one knows what actually goes down those planes before they wreck, and they know they're going to wreck. You know what
I
mean?
No, dude, I was reading his blog. Like, he seriously said that they announced, brace yourself for emergency landing.
Yeah, yeah, because you never know, because it's like, you see in the movies, but, like, you couldn't tell whether this was, they were just being cautious, or if this was, like, the real deal. And some people started freaking out.
It was the real deal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it totally was the real deal. And luckily, they were about to land without any landing gear, meaning, like, we're just, like, sliding this big piece of metal.
Like airplane.
And, right. You know, every time a plane slides down, it just goes in the
right.
Plane. Like,
yeah, I honestly was like, Jesus Christ, I could be dying right now. You know, it was intense. But at the last minute, they announced they got it working, but they're still, like, we're not 100%, so still brace yourselves. And when we pulled in, there was, you know, fire department, police, and, like, everyone was clapping and like people were hugging. I've like never experienced anything like that. It felt like we were going down. It was really intense.
Like cleaning the shit out of my pants.
Yeah, man, it was like made me really enjoy the show that night. You know, just happy to be alive.
A new lease
on
life.
Absolutely.
When I was doing the show.
Absolutely.
Like every time I fly, I go to the airport store and I buy those little Tanqueray bottles and I ask the stewardesses for just glasses of tonic. I'm like, can I have a tonic, please? And I just mix it up. I'm deathly afraid of flying. Yeah. I'm afraid of anything that has
Does
to do
it put you that. Out or do you just get drunk and like live?
I just
it?
Have to get shit faced.
Yeah.
Basically.
I was in Mexico doing shots before we got back on the plane. We took off and I almost was like, oh, fuck. Never get that shit faced again before.
It's a whole different experience drinking on the plane. It like hits you in a weird way.
It definitely hits you.
I was a pro at that at one point in time, you know, like rolling in, going from work on Friday and rolling into a show knowing you're landing at 10 and going on 11:30. Yeah. It's like, I might as well get a few drinks on this plane, you know.
I'm like looking back on Bonnaroo questions that I had. Like, because when I remember reading it, like you had just quit your job then and now it's a couple months later. So this is like your sole source of income.
Yeah.
You just quit your job. You still rocking the Cavalier?
You know what? It actually broke down.
Has the DJ life afforded you something like,
Nah, you can check out the Honda Accord out front.
I got the Honda Accord.
Yeah, right. The Cavalier was like my high school car. So that
dude, it was my first car was an 87 Cavalier station wagon.
Oh, man.
My favorite car of all time, by the way.
I love the Cav. I mean, the last... I actually, like, during the last few months I was working my job, it's funny because it was kind of like an older crew and people, some fairly expensive cars rolling in there. And my car, I figured out that it wouldn't start on an incline. And a lot of times it wouldn't start on flat surface and you had to shake it and then start it while you're shaking it. So, like, we would all get out of work and I was, like, that young dude, you know, shaking his car to get it to start. You know, it's, like, a little embarrassing. But one day I parked out in front of my apartment and it would not start. So I just, like, went out and bought a car straight up. So
yeah,
that's it.
That's the rock star lifestyle.
I guess so.
I'm going to just go buy a car straight up.
I guess you were, what, in the Midwest, and you called Tay Monday to come? What's the deal with that?
It was funny because when that went down, Dan Deacon, the guy I'm on tour with, is like a huge fan. He loves the dude. I really hadn't heard it, to be honest. I didn't know it, you know.
Yeah.
And some of those, like, internet phenomenons, like, passed by me a little quick. You know, I'm not, like, up on the internet that hardcore to, like, catch them whenever they first drop. You know, my booking agent was like, we can get Tay Zonde. Is that his name? Tay Zonde?
Yeah, that's it.
We can get Tay to play the show in Minneapolis where he's from. I don't really like necessarily like jokey things to play. I like it to just be like very sincere music all the time, because that's the way I try to approach my music. But Dan was a big fan of his, and Dan was like, no, this dude is 100% sincere, and he's really into it. And he's
like,
we should have. That's the way Dan was telling me. I really don't know. I really still haven't established my opinion. So he got on the bill, and people from like the Minneapolis Times started calling me, and everyone was asking me about Tay Zonde, and I was like, I honestly have no idea about this dude. You know, I just kind of like agreed to do the show. I agreed to put anyone on.
So he ended up coming on the bill.
It's gonna be in a few weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No. It's coming up. I'm excited to talk to the dude, see if he'll have a beer with me backstage.
I didn't know if he was actually playing the piano.
I believe he is.
Whatever the hell he's doing. He always gulps away from the.
Yeah, I really don't get it. You know what I mean? But like, I'm down for whatever. You know.
Whatever.
Exactly.
You have a very eclectic show. I mean, what was his name that started off tonight?
Skymall?
Yeah. Skymall. He was banging, man.
Yeah, dude, he's an old friend of mine. He's living in Pittsburgh now. He's lived in Miami and in Philadelphia in the past. So I roll with a lot of guys who do laptop music. So he's one of them. So it's cool whenever I can get them on these shows, because these are pretty big venues for like normal laptop dudes to be rocking.
As the night was going on, the place kept filling up and filling up. And I talked to the R5 guy, Sean, and he said, yeah, but at the end of the night, probably about 1,200 people here. That's got to be a big change from when you're playing basements.
Exactly. It's insane to me. I mean, especially like in New York, for example, we sold out like the first show, and we announced another show like last minute, sold out in 2 days. It just seems like, I mean, the level I'm playing at, there's so many big bands that were playing the same like tour circuit, you know?
Yeah.
I'm playing here every month. But yeah, it's very bizarre. Tonight was fun because, I mean, a lot of times at these bigger venues, you just get kind of industry guys who just like could kind of care less about music. They know what can make the money and they just do it. And that's like not the world I come from at all. I'm so used to like people going out on a limb to book you and helping you out by doing it, you know, being into the music. And that's why I book it. So that's why I like tonight. It just felt like a very kind of do-it-yourself show compared to a lot of the shows in this tour, where it was more kind of felt like this is a concert. You know, I'm not used to that. I like shows where it's like, this is a show. We're just hanging out. Here's a dude playing music. That's it. You know, he's just like us. I'm in a band. He's in a band, etc. So it felt like kind of like that vibe tonight.
You're working pretty much off of the fair use.
Right.
Are you getting any opposition from the use of the different samples?
Yeah, I mean, thus far we haven't. It's kind of surprising me. I mean, we've got a lot of support by some pretty big names as far as
in Senate, right?
Property. Yeah, like the Congressman Mike Doyle from Pennsylvania.
Right. Yeah.
And he's actually coming out to a show in D.C. on Wednesday. He asked for some guest list spots. So
oh, no way.
He's a
That's
cool
great.
Dude, man. We sat down, me and him, and Newsweek sat down, and we talked for a little bit over hot dogs.
Hot dogs, yeah. I thought I read
he's
that.
He's cool, because that's like some Pittsburgh shit. He's like a real Pittsburgh guy, you know what I mean? And and he totally was amped on coming out to the show and like asked for all his guest list spots and whatnot. So it was cool. I mean, just people like that getting behind it is cool, because I mean, I don't feel morally opposed to it. I really feel like the music's kind of, you know, just promoting other music and it's not affecting anyone's sales.
Well, Thurston Moore was cool about it.
Exactly. So I think a lot of people realize that there's kind of this old way of thinking that playing the guitar is like this ultimate original thing no matter what you're doing. But it's kind of like whenever you play the guitar, you're influenced by so many things and you're playing so many chord structures. You can either like manipulate physical media that other people did and kind of make something new out of it, or you can manipulate ideas. And to me, it's very similar. You know what I mean? It's like the Beatles, you know, bite Chuck Berry riffs, and you know, the Rolling Stones bite Muddy Waters riffs, and they're blatantly borrowing and building on them. That's the way like art and information goes down. So I feel like I'm doing a very like straightforward way of that. So I think in the future, like as sampling becomes more and more widespread and more and more normal, people will, you know, maybe hang on that perspective that's just an instrument to manipulate other people's music.
Yeah, it's just like Metallica suing the band over what, two chords or something like
that? It's insane. It's intimidating, man. It's just like it holds back so much, you know. It's like folk culture to spread ideas and borrow them and build on them. That's the way, you know, things get done. It's you know, I honestly would be so interested if there's a more easy way to sample if your work could be transformative. I think there'd be so much music, rock, jazz, whatever, that would be incorporating samples, and you could be making insane stuff, you know. Sampling's such a small world because people are, like, afraid to do it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You seldom see, like, a rock band get up there and throw it on an Elton John piano riff and kind of make a whole new, like, crazy song out of it. But anyone could, you know. That's, like, a pretty easy way to do it. And it's, like, the only people who really do it are mainstream musicians who know they're going to make a ton of money off it and they can afford it. It's crazy that there's, like, an art form or music that's, like, made for rich people to do. You know, it's like, it's nuts, you know, to think about that.
Yeah, the Tiny Dancer Biggie mix on Night Ripper. We've been at parties and played that. Yeah, everyone gets crazy on that one.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. Thank you, man.
Speaking of Night Ripper, that was in the top 40 of Spin of all last year.
Right, right. Yeah, it was like Rolling Stone, Spin, Blender, all that. It's kind of like, who cares with those magazines? To me, it's just cool they respect it as an album. It's not like top 40 like DJ mixer, top 40 mix CDs. It's like this album beat out like in like Rolling Stone, like my album beat out like Justin Timberlake's album. Like they,
you
know, they are interpreting it as new music, which is like my ultimate goal to like.
How's that feel?
You know, it's very cool. It's very like, that's what I want. That's the ultimate goal, is to like, I know I'm sampling, you know, it's I'm blatant. I'm as obvious about that as I can be.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, you can really make new music out of samples. And for like those people to be like, this is in our top 40 albums of new music this year. It's cool. It's like all these kind of respected publications, you know, support that. It's awesome for me.
I mean, I've heard a lot of stuff online about, is Kanye stealing from Greg Gillis by sampling Daft Punk?
You know, you know? I've got to go on record because there's a lot of horse shit involved with that with MTV.
Yeah.
At Bonnaroo, because they asked me that. And I was like, you know, probably not. But I did open for Kanye one time. He may have heard my material. That's what I said. I was like,
twisted it around a little bit.
And I was like, he probably is not influenced by me, but at the very least, he may have heard my stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean? Him sampling Daft Punk is like, you know, people have sampled all types of music, made hip hop forever since the 70s and 80s. So it's like not a new thing. And then MTV kind of went on and was like, took the quote. It's like, well, he has heard me before and I have opened for him. And then it was funny because they wrote that up, and if you just watch the video clip of me answering it, it's like they completely skew my words. And then like The Onion and like some other sites that went on to write the article of like, Gillis is letting press go to his head and stuff based on the MTV article without actually watching the video. You know, they regurgitated the story from MTV without actually pressing play, because anyone who would press play would see that I obviously like blew off the question and was completely like vague about the answer. You know what I mean? So that was kind of upsetting. Kanye West rolls with a DJ named A-Track, who's like very involved with this sort of thing. So I'm pretty positive that's where the influence came from. But, you know, dating back to forever, you know, rap has sampled all sorts of electronic, pop, rock, whatever. It's all been done. You know what I mean?
I thought that was brutal. A lot of media just reaches for stuff.
That was the worst I've seen, especially because the dude who sat down with me from MTV was a young guy, and he knew what he was talking about, and like we hung out, and I kind of, you know, expressed to him that it was very exciting for me to be talking to MTV.
Yeah.
You know, with the microphone. It's cool, you know, it's like a dream, and like it kind of just like screwed me over in this weird little way, you know. It was just like, I don't know, it was the first taste I got of like something.
We might chop you up too. It's like,
absolutely. It's like, yo, listen. Gillis hates MTV forever.
Nah, we'll do that shit. All right, we gotta talk about Playgirl.
Yeah.
We saw the karate kick in Playgirl. I mean, B bought the magazine. He rubbed a few out to that magazine.
Yeah, man, that was why. It's funny because, like, I get down and take off some clothes at shows depending on the show.
Always do it. I mean, most pictures I've seen.
Right. And, like, I've gotten, like, nude at shows, like, in the past, you know. I've been there, you know what I mean? A couple times. And Playgirl asked me, first it was a shirtless photo, and then they're like, they actually asked for a sexy photo shoot, like, shirtless. And I was like, what the hell does that mean, you know? And then it was just funny because I think my family is absolutely cool with me, like, doing whatever I want live, and it's
that's
in the
cool.
moment. You know what I mean? But they were like, I told them about it, and they're like, Greg, do not like get in your underwear for Playgirl. You know, they were like, really, like, do not go there. And because I, you know, maybe if they weren't around, you know, I may have just like went nude or something. You know what I mean?
Because
I would have been comfortable with it, but like, there was no way I could have been, you know, my mom picking that up, it would have been like the worst thing ever. Jesus. You know what I mean? Because I mean, but they knew about it. You know what I mean? I told them about it, so they hunted it down anyway. You know, like everything. They hunt down everything.
Right.
So yeah, but it was funny. I mean, I went to that shoot with all my buddies. We were all just kind of making fun of the situation, like, the whole time. Like, the photographer was like, having a hard time taking it pretty seriously, you know what I mean? So it was cool.
Okay,
it was
so you're having fun.
Exactly.
You're having fun.
I am very open to anyone being into my music in any market, so it's exciting when something like Playgirl, which is a bit out of my normal realm, you know, comes knocking at the door.
So we'll see next year. You'll be naked on the cover, right?
Absolutely. Step it up a notch.
So, Greg, when you come back in town, when are me and you going to play some ball, man?
Soon, man.
I want to rock.
I want to just play, like, around the world or something, because I don't know if I can get up and down that court, you know. Maybe, like...
I don't know if my dunk's going to handle it either, but I'm pretty sure the shot's still on. I'm pretty sure that doesn't go.
It's sad, because I used to be a point guard. My handle has slowed down. I've never been a fast dude, but I could do some herky jerky moves, you know, to throw
the
a guy.
The white boy game.
Right, exactly. And
yeah,
I cannot move like that anymore. You know, I need to stay on the outside, just distribute the ball, box out, stick to the fundamentals.
How do you feel about, what do you consider your hometown? Pittsburgh, definitely.
Yeah, because I mean, I grew up in Pittsburgh and I went to college in Cleveland.
Oh, you just went to college.
And now I'm back in Pittsburgh. Right. So it's definitely kind of where all my.
You think Pittsburgh's a big basketball town or what?
No, man. It's football.
Yeah,
I've never really played football, but I love the Steelers. You know, it's impossible to not like the Steelers there. I don't know. It's tough. I mean, they've had some like CBA teams, like Pittsburgh Explosion.
And don't work out ever.
They do not.
The Cole City just doesn't embrace them at all.
It's just like, you know, there's hockey too, so Penguins are pretty popular, which I don't follow them as much.
Yeah,
but I mean,
yeah.
The city seems to revolve around the Steelers.
You're always rocking the Pittsburgh hat, always representing it.
Yeah, man. I mean, being from Pittsburgh, I mean, there is a lot of very cool bands out of there right now.
Like I was talking to you earlier, Grand Buffet, man. That's one of my favorite bands that nobody, well, at least nobody that I know knows of.
I mean, Pittsburgh's a little bit of a smaller city, so it's one of those things where you really have to represent it. You know, it means a lot to me. You know, I think, you know.
Have you ever collaboed with
GB?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did a track with them a couple years back called Cool as Hell. I did the beats. I always make beats in my free time, but it rarely gets out. But that was the one time I actually did production for a hip-hop group, which is something I'm really interested in. But those guys, I mean, we kind of hang out all the time. I really want to do some more production for them because I think they're some of the most insane and one of my... favorite live acts ever. I see them so much. I've seen them probably more than any band in my life.
Really?
And I still like, I'm down with it every
time. They ever tour?
Time.
I mean, they
tour a lot actually.
How come you should?
I know,
you should,
man.
Get them on your bill.
I know. It actually seems crazy because like I've grew up looking up to them. They're always the huge band from Pittsburgh. So now that like I have some success on my side, I would feel crazy having them open
back,
for
right?
me.
Yeah.
Yeah, why that doesn't go down. That's Grand Buffet, you know, in Pittsburgh. It's like, you know, they're up there. But they both do solo stuff, so I'd really like...
do they?
Yeah, I like Grunge. The bigger dude does a lot of solo stuff. I like both their solo stuff, actually, so I would want to, you know, maybe do a little tour with one
I've
of them.
I've never heard any of their solo stuff, though.
Jackson, the smaller dude, his is a bit more far out, kind of weird pop music.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Grunge does, like, 90s-style murder raps. as well as some pop punk jams. He sounds like Blink 182 or something. It's phenomenal.
That's a very good question. Yeah. Very intimidating.
It's a question I've been wanting them to ask and they never have. Where did Girl Talk, the name, come from?
It's kind of hard to answer. The phrase is such like a popular American phrase. You know, it's usually associated with like teenage girls and like books and like makeup and magazines, all sorts of things like that. And when I started doing the music, you know, I think the music had more of a humorous edge, like right when I started it, and I was involved in a very experimental scene, guys doing really weird music on laptops, kind of chin-strokey, very artsy-fartsy sort of stuff.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of wanted to pick almost like the most flamboyant and ridiculous band name, because it'd be like all these made-up words with band names, all these very serious things, and it was like Girl Talk on the bill, and like I had this very flashy show. So it was kind of like... kind of making fun of that whole scene almost, you know, but when I did that, I didn't really anticipate it'd be like a 7-year career making move or anything like that.
Yeah, she was saying she used to play a game when she was a kid called Girl Talk. Remember the board games?
There's a few people bring those to shows sometimes. I have like a collection at this point, yeah. It's funny because like I'm comfortable with whatever band name, but it's just wild when you are playing a show like open up for Kanye or something, more of a hip hop crowd or playing 50 Cent's Party at the VMAs. It's kind of like being like a scrawny dude called Girl Talk. It's like the ultimate handicap. You know what I mean?
Oh, so, no, it's awesome. You're a sleeper.
Right, exactly. It is cool. Like, now I've accepted it. I like the kids are able to get into a dude called Girl Talk. It's very confusing. I think it's all for the better, you know? I think it does kind of have the essence of, like, I don't care. This is going to be fun, which is, like, what the music's all about.
Motrain's Tracks, based out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and hosted by Motrain and King B, bring you the most insane music, entertainment, and interview podcast you'll hear anywhere on the net. Motrain's Tracks always gives you the insider's look at all the best festivals and concerts in the U.S., as well as exclusive interviews with some of the world's most famous musicians. No, we don't give you that bullshit fluff interview that lots of other media outlets give you. We ask those questions that you've always wanted to ask, and we bring it to you guys on Motrain's Tracks Podcast. Make sure you check out themotrain.com for all the Tracks Crew's coverage of festivals, concerts, and all the random rantings. Thanks again to everyone for listening, and we'll see you on the tracks.
On the tracks.